You are listening to 88.9 FM in Irvine. The opinions expressed on this show do not necessarily represent those of the management of KUCI or the UC Board of Regents. For more information, go to kuci.org. Welcome to In the Garden with UC Master Gardeners. I am Katrina Kirkaby, and I'm here with Tina Spindler, and we are your co-hosts today of In the Garden with Master Gardeners. Welcome, Tina.
Thanks, Katrina. We're here to talk about October.
October, what to do in the garden in October.
Welcome, fall. And even though it's radio and no one can see, Katrina is wearing her orange shirt in honor of our October show because it's going to be Halloween and we'll be picking pumpkins soon.
It felt like fall today.
Yeah. So this is actually, I don't know about you, but October is my busiest month in the garden.
Absolutely.
I know a lot of folks who haven't gardened in Southern California for a long time may think that spring is the busiest time in the garden, but in Southern California, it's October.
And the reason for that is because there's so much to do right now that will save you so much time and energy in the future.
Yeah, and it isn't even just time and energy, although it does, but it just gives you, the time that you spend now gives you so many amazing results. So, for instance, you know, you can plant perennials in the spring, right? But then they're barely getting their feet wet, so to speak, their roots established before we get those hot days of summer. And so their performance might be not all that optimal. But if you plant perennials in the fall, in October, they get to take advantage of our winter rains. Knock wood, we're going to get some. We hope,
please.
And they have all winter long and all spring to be completely settled in, fully grown, and then they can just bloom their little heads off if they're a flowering perennial, or just give you all kinds of, you know, wonderful growth and beautiful results if they're a tree or a shrub of some other type. But if there's one word that sums up October for me, it's plant.
Plant.
Plant, plant, plant.
Plant, plant. You know, people say that you have a green thumb, and people have a green thumb, but one of the ways of having a green thumb, so to speak, is just to be kind of smart on what you're doing. And by giving plants now, these perennials, time to get their roots, get comfortable, start growing, and by springtime, they're ready to take off.
Yeah, they really are. And so any perennial that you plant, almost any perennial, the exceptions to planting right now would be tropical plants because they typically like warmer weather. You don't want to typically plant them right before it gets cold. And also the bare root plants, of course, which we'll talk about probably in December and January, because that's the time when you want to plant bare root things like roses and fruit trees. But other than that, if you want to plant seeds for a winter veggie crop, now's the time. If you want to plant starts, transplants of winter veggies and cool season annuals, now's the time. As well as, of course, my favorite, spring flowering bulbs, now's the time. I actually have to make myself a list of all of the things that I want to do out in the garden in October and then prioritize them, because odds are October is going to run out before I get everything done.
Exactly, because there is so much to do. Yeah. There's so much you can do.
Absolutely.
But yeah. It's so much you do now that it just saves. It, not only you have nicer plants, but it saves time later on.
The other thing that I love is it's such a pleasant time of year to work in the garden.
Oh, yeah.
The really hot days are, you know, we still have some hot days, don't get me wrong, but because the days are getting shorter, the hours that we have of that heat are a lot less, and so it's just a lot more pleasant to work out in the garden. And if we're lucky, we might even, you know, sometimes we get a rain shower or two in October, and that's always fun, the first rain shower of the year.
Yeah. You know, I think also a lot of people think it's fall and it's quieting down, and so we get this misconception in our head that it's fall and it's quieting down and it's wintertime. So you kind of have to rock that a little bit to think, oh, it's not quieting down, things are going to start happening.
And I think that's because most of our families, you know, a generation or two ago, emigrated from the east part of the country. And that's true when you, you know, go back to climates where it starts to get, they start having frost and freezes, and then before you know it, you know, snow in late November or early December. But in California, Southern California, of course, not the mountains, but Southern California, we don't have that freezing and cold weather, and so we have the benefit of gardening year-round. And for me personally, it's actually my more favorite time of year to garden is in the cooler months, because, man, in those 90-degree days in July and August and September, I don't even, as much as I love to garden, I don't want to be out there when it's that hot.
Yeah, I have that hot time of the year. It's really early in the morning. You're going to see me like sunrise or late in the afternoon when it's right before sunset because it gets too hot.
Yeah.
But you know, Tina, also, you grew up with gardening, and I really didn't. I loved it, but I didn't. And I think there is a perception, though, even some people that live here that haven't gardened don't realize, you know, we think shorter days, nothing's going to grow. And we say, oh, it's getting ready for the holidays, it's going to be too cold, it's not enough sun. You know, we think of all these things, and a lot of people have these wonderful summer gardens, and they don't do anything in the winter.
I know, and I just think that it's so sad, because I think if people try it, they'll discover, like I did, that it's actually my preferred time to garden.
Mine too.
Yeah.
I really like it, and I love the winter vegetables.
Well, let's talk about that, because I think in order to cover everything that we want to cover in this show today, let's take it by category, right? So let's start with vegetables, since you brought it up.
So hopefully our yard is prepared, our soil is ready.
We talked about that last month, advising folks to try and get their soil ready. If you didn't, though, for your veggie garden, go ahead out there, remove the remaining, you know, summer vegetables that are pretty much finished. I know I've already pulled out all my squashes, and the only thing I've left is a couple tomatoes and pepper plants that are still going strong. But for most of us, our beans and squashes will probably have gotten mildew or some other sort of problem that results in them not doing so well. So clear those out, dig your soil to the depth of 10 to 12 inches, add 3 inches or so of compost soil amendment. It's called a lot of different things. Sometimes the bags say garden soil, but believe us, it's not really garden soil. It's actually organic matter that's been composted. So if you put about 3 inches on top of the soil and then you dig it in, chop it all up, and add some organic fertilizer based on the amount that your package of fertilizer tells you to, and then smooth it all out with a rake, and then you are ready to plant our favorite winter vegetables. Okay, Trina, you go first. What are your favorites?
Well, first I want to tell everybody, because I know sometimes people say, I don't have enough time to really work on the soil, I just want to plant.
Uh-huh.
So that is so not right.
Well, it isn't that it's just not right. It is a guaranteed recipe for failure.
So if you only have so much time, take part of that time and do maybe a few less vegetables and make sure you have prepped your soil.
Absolutely.
Because it's kind of like a foundation of a house. If you don't have a good foundation, your house is not going to stand for long.
Absolutely.
So do take some time with your soil prep. And it might not be the most fun thing in the world, but just turn it into fun, make it a little smaller area, but do have good soil.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Okay, where do we go? Oh, favorites. Okay, let's see. I love cauliflower and broccoli.
Awesome.
And oh my goodness, I think those are a couple of my favorites. Peas.
Do you usually start your cauliflower and broccoli from seed, or do you buy transplants for those?
I have bought transplants. Guess what I'm doing this year because of you?
You're going to try some seeds. Huh?
I am doing seeds.
Cool. Good job.
Yes. I am doing seeds.
Have you already started them last month? Or are you?
Yeah, started them last month. But yeah, I'm excited. I listened to Tina Shaw. I sat with her last month, and she says get these little containers out and do it. So we're doing it, and there's so many different choices you have.
Yeah, yeah, and it's not too late to start them from seed. They won't be ready to plant out in the garden for about 6 weeks, so that means probably mid-November if you were to start broccoli and cauliflower. in, you know, 6-pack containers. You'd want to do that. I like to start them indoors because they germinate quickly when they're in that 70-degree environment indoors. And then once they're germinated, you can move them out on a patio, sheltered patio, and make sure that they stay, you know, watered. And then you want to make sure that they're 3 to 4 inches tall before you, you know, plant them out in the garden.
And you know what I really like about that is the choices you get.
Oh, because you can do that wonderful purple cauliflower, you know?
Whatever you want. And yeah, some unique stuff that you just cannot get in the store.
Yeah, there's orange cauliflower and purple cauliflower. And, you know, there's these great, you know, broccolis and broccolini and, you know, a lot of different varieties that you might not be able to find at your nurseries. Although I have to say, in the last 5 years, I think the nurseries are carrying a lot bigger variety than they ever used to before.
So the bottom line, whatever works in your life.
Yeah, and if you don't want to be bothered with planting from seed and starting them indoors and taking them out on the patio, you know, absolutely go to the nursery or even the big box retailers and buy a 6-pack of broccoli that's already been started or a 6-pack of cauliflower. But one thing that I would recommend that you do try from seed, because it is so fun and so stupidly easy, is lettuce. And the varieties of lettuces that are available by seed are just almost infinite, it seems like, when you look at a catalog.
And a package of seed is cheap.
Oh, my gosh, yeah. It's, you know, $2 to $3, maybe $4 max.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. And you're going to have lots and lots, more lettuce than you could handle.
Well, Katrina and I, last month after we recorded the September show, went out to my garage and got out my big buckets of seed packets that I have, because as a master gardener, you often get lots of lovely donations and contributions. And so we went through and pulled out a bunch of the cool season veggies and opened up the packets, and we got Ziplocs out, and I shared seeds with her, because there's no way I can use those whole packets in my garden.
And it's so exciting.
Yeah.
It's so exciting, and it turns, a lot of them, especially carrots and some other vegetables, just you can't do it by packages.
Yeah, so that's an idea, you know, buy some packages and share with a friend. It just makes the whole gardening experience so much more fun.
What do you like to plant?
So my favorites, I love homegrown carrots.
Oh, yeah.
And so
they're so sweet.
They're so sweet.
So sweet.
Honestly. And I do like to juice a little bit. And so what's really fun when you grow your own carrots is you just run out and grab as many carrots as you need for that day, you know, to make a little juice concoction. So I love to do that. Our listeners should be aware that carrots do take a long time to mature. So don't, you know, the carrots that you plant in October, you're not going to eat till January probably. So don't get discouraged. But they are a wonderful thing to plant with kids, because even though it does take a long time, the kids will kind of forget, you know, that they planted them. And then, you know, 90 days later, you can take them outside and they'll have buried treasure that they get to dig up, which is, you know, immensely exciting to dig for buried treasure.
Yeah.
So,
exactly.
And one of the ways I like to sow the carrot seeds is after you've prepared your soil, as we discussed, and you've made it nice and loose down to a depth of a foot. Because remember, those carrots are going to be poking their little roots down in the soil. So you want to make sure that that soil is nice and loose so they don't have obstacles to overcome. And what I like to do is because the carrot seeds are pretty small, I like to mix a little bit of sand or potting soil with the seeds and then broadcast sow it over the top of the prepared soil.
Now, for those of us who don't know what broadcasting means.
It just means you take I get just a little bowl or a little bucket, and I put a few handfuls of sand, for instance, in it, and then I take the seed packet and dump the seeds in there, and I mix the seeds in there. And what it does is, instead of trying to plant, you know, one little seed that's tiny and you can't really control, you know, where it goes as you're trying to sprinkle those individual seeds, when you then sprinkle the sand on top of the soil, remember that sand has the seed in it. And so it allows you to get those seeds to not be clumped up, you know, quite so close together, because they're mixed with the sand.
They need some room to grow.
Yeah. And I don't even actually plant them in rows, because if you think about it, an individual carrot is only a half an inch to an inch wide, right? So they can be awfully close together, you know, mm-hmm. in terms of the spacing. And so by doing that, I then just start thinning them, you know, as the seeds germinate and you see the little green carrot top. You just thin them till you have about, you know, 2 inches, an inch and a half between each carrot so that it can grow to its mature size. But in the meantime, as you thin them, you've got those gourmet baby carrots that you can just, you know, steam like, you know, for a couple of minutes and they're
tender and sweet
and yummy. And I had the area I planted my carrots, and I actually grow carrots almost year round. I don't plant them in the heat of summer, but I did a late spring crop that I just harvested in August, actually. And from a 1.5 foot wide strip across my 5 foot raised bed, so it was like 1.5 feet, 18 inches by 5 feet, a little rectangle that size. I can't even tell you how many pounds of carrots I got. I got, if you took a great big mixing bowl, like 4 great big mixing bowls full of carrots out of that little small space.
Wow.
So the moral of the story is you don't need a lot of space to grow carrots.
And you know what I want to tell everybody? You don't need to have a vegetable garden either.
No.
You know, we do a lot. If you have limited space, I think one of the most fun things I've had happen is somebody came into my house and said, what is that incredible flower you have? What is that plant that you have in your roses and your other plants? And I said, huh? And I went outside. She goes, that's incredible. It was big. It was white. It had these huge leaves on it. It was wide across, taking up quite a bit of my, right in front of my roses. And she's like, that is incredible. What is that? And I go, it's a cauliflower.
Isn't that funny?
It's a cauliflower.
Yeah.
But it was with my basil and my roses, and the white just made it pop. And
Absolutely.
You can plant. If you don't have a lot of room in your vegetable garden, or you don't have a vegetable garden, you can plant vegetables with other plants.
Yeah.
And red peppers coming up.
Walk on
the wild
mix side. Mix veggies with flowers.
It's wonderful.
Yeah. No, it is wonderful. And the other thing, too, is you can do so much with containers. And I actually love to grow carrots in containers. You just want a pot that's pretty deep. You know, you want to make sure that pot's about 12 inches deep. But you get a 16, 18-inch pot that's, you know, a foot deep. You can grow a fair number of carrots in that. And again, if you're gardening with kids, what a great opportunity, you know, to teach them to garden and to let them understand the wonder of seeds, you know, germinating, and then months later being able to eat that. And you can do things like labeling the pots with their names, getting them to make little, you know, tags that say, you know, Mary's carrot garden. I mean, it can be a really, really fun project. So don't think that because you don't have in the ground space, you can't grow veggies. Get some pots and
some pots.
Wine barrels and, you know, metal troughs, you know, those that you can get at the hardware store, you know, that are,
for horses?
Yeah. Have you ever seen those? And I saw a school garden once that had those.
It's in my neighborhood. I live in a horsey neighborhood.
Oh, there you go.
People plant them.
Yeah.
And it just kind of goes with the decor.
It does.
Of where we live, because you have these big metal containers that feed, you know, food or grain or water for horses, and you could just fill them up and plant them.
And they last forever.
Oh, my gosh. I have one from probably in the 1950s.
Yeah, exactly. So even though they're kind of expensive to buy initially, if you know you're going to be, you know, gardening in them for a long time, it's probably worth the investment.
You know, and you could find them used, too.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Find them used.
Look on Craigslist or something.
Yeah, Craigslist or thrift stores. And
yeah.
Depending on what area you live in.
But anyway, the moral of the story is you can grow veggies wherever you live, even if you have just a balcony. The one thing you do know that you do need that you can't short yourself on, and that is sun.
Sun.
So we do want you to be sure that you look where you're going to plant, and you need to have 6 to 8 hours of sun. The good thing about winter veggies is they're the ones that take the lower end of sun. So you can easily grow lettuce with, you know, 6 hours of sun. Tomatoes, maybe not so much, but
I've tried that. It doesn't work so well.
But the
tomatoes really like sun.
They do. But the winter veggies are great. So if you haven't had success growing the hot peppers and tomatoes because you don't have a sunny enough place, if you have 6 hours, you may have enough for your winter veggies.
One of our vegetable gardens, I cannot, in the wintertime, some people can overwinter like you do, overwinter tomatoes. I can't because I lose the sun.
Because of the placement.
Placement of the sun. Yeah. It goes behind the trees, and I just don't have enough hours to do tomatoes. But I can have an incredible winter garden.
Yep. Because they don't need as much sun.
They don't need as much sun, yeah. And it's actually, my winter garden rocks down there.
That's
and
so
it does,
awesome.
But I just, you know, I can't overwinter tomatoes.
Yeah.
But I can have a winter garden.
Hey.
So if you're limited on sun, try wintertime.
Yeah, exactly. And we'll just go ahead and check off the rest of the veggies that you can try planting in the winter. So Katrina already mentioned the cauliflower and the broccoli. Those are members of the kohl family, which also include cabbages and Brussels sprouts. Those are all great winter crops.
Brussels or cabbages. We love growing cabbages.
And they're actually so pretty in the garden. That's a good one to put in between your roses.
That's another one we put up there.
Yeah. And especially if you grow the purple cabbages, aren't those just so pretty? Yeah. So those are good ones. And then any root vegetables. So think turnips, carrots, radishes, beets. I love to grow homegrown beets.
Yeah. Oh.
And those
are so easy.
They're so easy, and they're harvestable at, if that's a word, harvestable, at their different stages. So I start harvesting them when they're only about an inch and a half in diameter. But then, you know, the ones you don't get to end up getting to be 2-2.5 inches, and you can harvest them then too. So I really like them because they will last. You know, you don't have to harvest them all at once. Yeah.
And if you've never tried a homegrown beet, you got to try homegrown beet. I always thought beets were like what you got in a can. And I was not going to have one of those. And I went to my father-in-law's house not too long after we got married, and he made beets. And I'm like, oh, I'm going to have to suck this thing down. And it was incredible.
Yeah.
It was incredible.
There's a big difference.
He brought it from his garden that day, and it was a huge difference. So if you've never tried a homegrown beet, try it.
Yeah, they're absolutely yummy. And I like to roast up a whole tray of them, you know, cookie sheet of them. And then you have them that you can use the rest of the week, and you can, you know, slice them or julienne them and put them in salads or all kinds of nice things.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
And it's great for a busy schedule.
Yeah, it is.
Because you already have them done. You do a roast them, and you have them ready in the kitchen, and you could just refrigerator and just throw them in for lunch and an easy dinner, and they're good cold.
The little goat cheese sprinkled on top.
Yeah.
Oh, so yummy. So what else haven't we talked about? Well, we talked about lettuces, a million different kinds of varieties of lettuces.
Peas.
And the peas. Love snap peas. And then there are also shelling peas if you want to, you know, take the time to shell the peas, you know, so that you can have the actual little pea.
And they're wonderful. I don't do them. It's just something I don't do, but a lot of people do that, and they're wonderful.
I have done it, but it does take a lot of time to shell peas. So
it does.
So I don't usually. I like the snap peas better.
I love the snap peas.
Yeah. So
kale.
And kale.
Oh, kale.
That's been Katrina and my kind of new favorite vegetable the last couple of years. We love kale. And there's a lot of different varieties, so my favorite is the blue curly kale, but you like, what's the kind you like?
I like cosmic kale.
Cosmic kale, yeah. It's real pretty, isn't it?
Oh, it's really pretty. It's a variegated green and almost like ivory color. It's really pretty, and it's not as sharp.
Not as tangy.
Yeah. And what I also like to, like, grow several kinds of kale, and then I mix them together.
Ah.
So I have a little bit of everything.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
I eat kale all year long.
I do too. I mean, I have to be honest. I still have the blue curly kale and the red Russian kale that I planted.
Oh, I do too.
Last fall.
Yeah.
In my garden.
Yeah.
Now they're starting to look a little sad and a little eaten, you know, around the edges. So I will get some new plants or seeds and plant them this month, and then pull the old ones out. But I probably mentioned this before, but at the demo garden at the Great Park, Master Gardeners had a kale plant there that lasted for 3 years and got to be over 7 feet tall. So kale in Southern California
if you want
will keep on going.
If you like kale and you want something easy, just plant kale because it is the easiest plant to grow.
It's easy and it's so versatile. I know you do a lot of things with it. And, you know, one of the things I love having it all year long is if I make a smoothie for breakfast, mm-hmm. I always put a leaf of kale in because of the nutrition that it adds to the smoothie. But I know you have some clever ways you like to fix kale, too.
I use it a lot in salads. I've done kale chips. I've dehydrated
kale chips, that's right, yeah.
You know, just a little bit of olive oil and some salt. And I have a dehydrator, but you can put it in the oven on a low temperature, and it's healthier than other kind of snacks, and people like it, and it looks a little different. Like, what is it? And it tastes really yummy.
Yeah.
So that's something you can get your kids hooked on, too.
Right. So,
or your husband.
Right. So lots of options for the winter veggie garden. Go out there and do it. Winter veggie gardens are also fabulous, I think, because they're smaller space requirements. You know, you think about a zucchini plant or a tomato plant, and you know how much space those take. But on the other hand, when you think about your winter vegetables and you're planting lettuce, oh, I forgot spinach. Spinach is another good one. But you think about those, you get so many more plants in the amount of space that a tomato plant or a, you know, squash plant would take. So if you are short on space or you're gardening in containers, that's another reason you really want to try these winter veggies, is because they're real adaptable to smaller spaces.
And it also seems, I don't seem to take as much time. You know, we get a little bit more rain, so I don't have to water as much. It's not those blaring hot days where I'm worried about it drying out immediately.
I think you're absolutely right, yeah.
It's just easier to garden in the winter.
I think it is.
And it's nice outside.
It is. And the other thing is you're probably not on vacation. You know, whereas in the summer, you end up going on vacation for a week or maybe longer. And with the heat, you know, you can lose your whole veggie garden if you don't have somebody, you know, watching out for it. Whereas in the winter, if you go away for a long weekend over the holidays, you know, it's going to survive. Water it well.
Look at the weather report. Oh, it's going to rain.
With any luck, you'll get a little rain. And so I agree. I think winter veggie gardens are a lot easier than summer ones. But we have so much that we need to cover. Do we need to do our little station ID?
I think it's time to do our little station ID. So I need to let everybody know that you are listening to 88.9 FM in Irvine, and that the opinions expressed on this show do not necessarily represent those of the management of KUCI or the UC Board of Regents. For more information, go to kuci.org. All right, with that being done, where should we go next, Tina?
Well, I think we got to keep planting. Should we move on to our next category?
Yes.
Okay, let's move on to our category of how about water thrifty and drought tolerant plants.
Oh, good idea.
I think we mentioned last month that it was a good time in September if you were planning on converting some of your landscape or all of your landscape to water thrifty type of landscape, that September was a great month to do your planning. And now that October is here, and actually throughout the whole winter, that would be the time when you want to actually execute and do the planting of your drought tolerant garden. And so there are so many great websites. A lot of the water districts have fabulous information on planting drought-tolerant plants. BeWaterWise.com has a lot of good information about that. So we're not going to get into that too heavily in detail. We're also later this month going to have some guests who are going to talk about. We'll have entire shows devoted to,
I think, winter is being water-wise.
Yeah, we're going to talk about that in both October and November. I think we're going to have some shows on that. So we won't go into that in any more detail now, other than to say, if you're making your list of what you want to do in October, and that is one of the things you want to do this year, be sure and put that on your October list.
Put it on your October list, and then also look at your calendar to block off some time. Because if you're changing your garden out, it's not going to be, a 20-minute procedure. You're going to have some time, so look at your calendar and see if it really works for you.
Yeah, and also look at that calendar. because this type of planting with the natives and the other drought-tolerant plants can easily go into November and December and January. So if it isn't the greatest time for you to do it in October, it's okay. You have some more time that you can get it
done. Just start planting.
Yeah.
it's a big deal.
But what you probably do want to get done in October, though, are two things if you want to have beautiful flowers in the winter and spring. And the first one, of course, is my all-time favorite, and that is bulbs, which we talked a little bit about last month.
Tina's starting to light up.
Yeah.
She's smiling.
And the reason I love them so much is they are just stunning. They make you look like you are the master of master gardeners because they just bloom prolifically, and you really don't have to do a whole lot. So the bulbs that I like to plant this time of year, which will bloom, depends on our weather, but they can start blooming the end of January, beginning of February, and then they'll go through until May, depending on the bulb. But the ones that I really like are any of the narcissus, which, you know, the daffodils are part of the narcissus family. There are some that naturalize better in California. Some narcissus or daffodils like to have more winter chill than we get in Southern California. We don't have time to go into all of that, but you can Google best narcissus for Southern California, and you'll get some named varieties there. And what's cool if you get those is that they'll come back year after year, which is always a bonus. The other ones that I really like are freesias. That's a South African bulb, and if you've ever gotten those from the florist, the scent, I love the scent, and they'll a little bouquet of them will provide scent throughout an entire room. Those are really fun, and because they're a South African bulb, they naturalize, and they come back year after year. Also love Dutch iris because they are just so beautiful in bouquets, those long, straight stems and those deep blues and purples, and then they also come in yellows and whites. So those are a fabulous plant, and because they're a little taller, you can put them farther back in your flower bed. And what else do I like? Oh, well, my very favorite is actually not technically a bulb. It's called a corm, and that are ranunculus. And ranunculus are a little bit finicky because they can rot easier than some of the other bulbs. So they like to be planted shallowly, only about an inch deep. And I actually start them in six packs because I tend to lose a fair number of them if I just plant them directly in the ground because, you know, you can't control where the sprinkler is hitting and how wet it's getting. Or then we get rain and, you know, they get too wet. So I've actually started putting them in six packs, and that's it's a fun thing for kids to do because the corms are about an inch in diameter, so they're real easy for even small kids to handle. And you just fill up your six packs with, you know, some potting mix, and you just plop one of these corms in each one and cover it up with a little more potting soil and leave it outside and water it, and in a few weeks you've got, you know, little sprouts coming up. So that's pretty fun for kids to see.
You know, so many people think bulbs are hard.
No, they're easy.
I was talking to somebody the other day saying, oh, bulbs are just so much work. And I said, no, you haven't listened to Tina.
They're so easy.
You have not listened to Tina. I always wonder why your yard looks so beautiful. Well, you have a certain amount of bulbs that you have in your yard, and it's like they're working for free.
They are, and I plant new ones every year because there are certain ones, like the ranunculus, that don't reliably come back every year. Mm-hmm. And people are probably saying, well, she hasn't mentioned tulips. But I don't mention tulips because I just don't think you get the bang for the buck with a tulip. They're, you know, real expensive. Each bulb is, you know, a buck to $2 a piece. And you get one flower.
Yeah.
And the other problem in Southern California is if you don't buy pre-chilled bulbs, you have to chill them in your refrigerator for 6 weeks before you plant them. So for me, that's just too much work. I'd rather go to the florist and buy a bouquet of tulips. It's a lot easier and you know, probably not any more expensive. So try tulips if you want. You know, I did when I was younger. I kept trying tulips because I do like them. They're a pretty flower. But then I got lazy and I wanted something that gave me you know, more bang for the buck. And so I do like these bulbs that will naturalize and last for a number of years. And then the ranunculus that I have to plant every year are just very stunning and my favorite flower. So I go ahead and plant them every year.
And you know what's nice about Tina's bulbs is that all of a sudden they come up through other things and next to other things. And it's like a present that comes up out of the ground. And you've done this work in October, and all of a sudden they're showing up, and it looks like you've done that work then.
I'm really glad you mentioned that, Katrina, because we should talk a little bit about planting bulbs. Just like planting any flower bed, you know, you do need to prepare the soil, right? You need to dig down, put some compost in it, you know, mix it up, put a little fertilizer in it. But the way I like to plant bulbs, as Katrina mentioned, is, you know, I have a lot of roses and perennials because I just love flowers of all kinds. And so what I do is I just find little pockets in between the rose bushes or, you know, Shasta daisies or whatever else I've got growing out there. And so then I only have to dig up, a hole that's, you know, maybe 18 inches by, you know, 24 inches or something, you know, just a little area. And I then, you know, plant, you know, freesias, or if it's farther back in the bed, I'll plant the Dutch iris. And so as Katrina said, and then I don't have to do it every year for those particular bulbs because they will naturalize, and the daffodils as well. And so like she says, it's, you know, here you've pruned your roses in January, you know, everything's looking a little bit, you know, not too exciting. And then lo and behold, at the end of January, beginning of February, you have these bright yellow daffodils coming up in between everything, or, you know, dark blue iris. And it's just, I can't describe the feeling. It's
like a present.
It is. It's like a present. It's like Christmas presents or something. So anyway, I do recommend them. They're wonderful. And again, if you don't have a yard, they are fabulous in pots. Absolutely fabulous. And I have a little trick for pots, and that is you can layer bulbs, which means that you can plant, say, three different kinds of bulbs. And you plant the bulbs, in general, you plant two times their height. So say you have a daffodil bulb that's like, you know, 2 inches tall, then you would want to plant that twice that depth in the earth. Well, when you're doing it in pots, you can do your deepest layer of daffodils, put a little soil on, then you can have a layer of Dutch iris and put a little soil on that, and then at the very top you can put some ranunculus or freesias and just, you know, cover those with a little bit of soil. And then you just stick that pot in an unobtrusive area in your garden, you know, because it's going to look like bare soil, and then you water it. But lo and behold, in a couple of months you're going to have all of these, you know, bulbs that start coming up. And depending on the weather, all of them may bloom all at once, or you may have, you know, first the freesias and then the daffodils or the iris. You know, it just depends on what bulbs you choose. But it's just so much fun to have that little pot of bulbs that, you know, keeps on giving you this color over an extended number of weeks.
And it's also nice because that time of year, there's not a lot blooming. You know,
well, we're going to talk next about how we can have more things blooming.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So I think that's enough on bulbs. Don't want to bore everyone with my favorite. But if you want more color in your garden, there's lots of ways that you can do that. First of all, let's talk about California wildflowers. Who likes poppies?
Mm.
Who doesn't like poppies, I should say.
I don't know anybody who doesn't like poppies.
California poppies. So where I live in Irvine, the landscape in the community common areas is very California-oriented, a lot of California natives. And so what we do is we spray the California poppy seeds down the main street.
Oh, how cool is
that? Yeah, and so they just kind of pop up all throughout the native grasses and the native sages and so on and so forth. And that starts happening, they start blooming, probably in March-ish. Again, it depends on the weather. And then they'll last until the weather gets hot, so they'll last through May probably. But there's nothing like, I mean, puppies just make you happy.
Puppies make you happy. Even the name makes you happy.
Yeah,
puppy.
Puppy. So that's a really fun thing to do in your own garden, especially if you have some drought-tolerant landscape, because remember, these are, you know, California natives, and so they'll like some water in the winter, because that's what causes us to have those great wildflower blooming years, right, is when we get some rain. But if you have, you know, a drought-tolerant landscape, consider, you know, tossing out handfuls of poppy seeds. And again, it's a great idea to mix the poppy seeds, because they're really tiny. Think poppy,
really tiny.
Poppy seeds on like a poppy seed roll. We all know how tiny those are. So that's a great idea, is to mix that with some sand before you, you know, toss them. But you can just take handfuls of them and toss them, you know, all throughout your drought-tolerant landscape. And gosh, how fun will that be to have those orange poppies poking through all of your little nooks and crannies?
That's wonderful.
Yeah. That's wonderful. So that's another way to get color in a real natural kind of way and in your drought-tolerant garden. Because I know some people think that drought-tolerant gardens, you know, aren't very pretty or colorful. Well, that's a way to get some seasonal color in your drought-tolerant garden. And you don't have to just do poppies. You know, we have a lot of other California wildflowers, so you can and get a catalog or go online or go down to Tree of Life Nursery. They usually have a good assortment of the California native seeds, and you can mix them, you know, so that you get a couple of different ones, you know, that are coming up. But at least do poppies, because they're just so cool.
Most of us have a dry place in our yard that you could just throw some seeds.
Absolutely.
And there's another one you really don't have to take care of.
Yeah, and actually the poppy plants, I didn't know this until we started doing them in my association area. They're actually perennial. So if you, you know, just leave them there and, you know, don't pull them up when they're finished blooming, first of all, their seed heads will explode and send more poppy seeds out in your yard. And the plants actually will, depending on the weather conditions, sometimes if we have a super hot summer, they'll, you know, burn up and they won't over the summer won't last. But we've had good luck here, because we do have a little bit of irrigation, getting them to be perennial and come back the next year. So that's cool. But if you have a more traditional garden, more traditional flower beds, and you want color in addition to perhaps your roses or your bulbs that you planted, there are lots of perennials that love to be planted in the fall. I mean, almost any flowering perennial loves to be planted in the fall. You know, my personal favorite is Shasta daisies. I put those all over my yard. But, you know, you've got echinacea, you've got daylilies. Gosh, you know, there's an infinite number of perennials, and fall is a great time to plant them.
Yeah, and those of us who work and have busy schedules, I love having flowers, but having a base of some really nice perennials, I've had times where I just haven't had time to garden.
Yeah.
And, you know, my base perennials are there, and it's okay.
Yeah, you get a little bit of bloom with almost no effort. So,
and they give you green, they give you, you know, they give you, they take up space in your yard, they give you back easily, and you don't have to keep planting them.
Right, exactly. You know, lavender, you know, which we think of as a warm season plant, and it is, but remember, lavender is a perennial, and so fall is a great time to plant lavender. You know, you may not see any blooms on it until springtime, but it's still
a pretty plant.
It's still a pretty plant. You know, they have those lovely grayish greenish leaves. So, you know, any perennial, virtually any perennial, as we said earlier, will love to be planted in the fall, other than the tropicals and the bare roots. So if you wanted to add some more perennials, now's the time to do it. Also, if you want free perennials, look around your yard. If you have plants like daylilies that have gotten, you know, pretty dense, you can dig that up and cut it into smaller clumps and replant around your yard, and that's a great source of free plants. I do that with my Shasta daisies, clivia, you know, all kinds of perennial plants that have been in your yard for a while. Bird of paradise. Oh my gosh, have you ever tried to divide a bird of paradise?
No.
Those things can get so huge. But if you had a bird of paradise and you wanted to wrestle with it, it's a good time to dig it up and divide it and replant it, you know, throughout your yard if you wanted to extend that. It's also a good time to take care of your perennials. So look at them. If they were summer blooming perennials, you know, maybe you need to deadhead them. Maybe they have some dead wood, you know, from that season. You want to cut that out, you know, give them a little haircut and freshen them up.
One thing I used to do, and I don't do it anymore, and that I'm now doing, is I cut some of my perennials back, not hard in the wintertime, and I cut them back and let them grow a little bit, and then I have them all winter long, and then I do my hard cut in, you know, when the days start getting longer.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, yeah.
I mean, there's other things that are blooming right now, but right. things that, you know, I just don't want a dead bush
right.
for 3 months. But it's kind of straggly, so I kind of cut it back.
Oh, yeah. It's a great time of year to tidy things up and try and rejuvenate them right now.
And then still there's enough sun where they'll grow back.
Right.
You know, but they're not going to grow back so huge. But and then January or February, when days start getting longer, I'll do a harder cut and they'll come back faster.
Faster, when the weather's starting to warm up.
But if I cut the heck out of them now...
Yeah, because then it starts getting cold and they're kind of wimpy.
Yeah.
They're wimping out.
You have a wimpy plant for a while.
The other thing that's a great idea to do this time of year, because I don't know about you, but my fall bloomers, I never think of enough of planting fall bloomers. You know, I'm always focused on, you know, the bulbs that are going to bloom in spring. But now's a great time when you go to the nursery and you see some fall blooming plants. To choose those plants because they're in bloom right now so that, you know, from here on out, you're going to have these perennials that bloom for you at that time of year. You know, one of the most common that we see in our area is the Salvia leucantha, the Mexican sage, and I have, you know, a huge clump of that in my front yard next to some white blooming roses. And the purple and the white rose is just, you know, a beautiful combination. And I'm always so excited when I see it blooming because there's not a whole lot else that's blooming in the yard, you know, in October. So I'm always excited to see that.
Yeah, I have one not quite as large as yours, but it's so nice.
Yeah.
It's just, it's really, it gives so much dimension and color, and the colors feel like autumn-like.
Yeah. And the other one I want to mention, which you probably noticed when you came to my house, that has just started blooming is the Camellia sasanqua. That is the camellia that blooms in the fall. And I love that camellia. I mean, I love all camellias, but the Camellia japonicas, because I have reclaimed water, I think, just they aren't particularly happy.
Too much salt?
I think so. They struggle. But I got this Camellia sasanqua apple blossom a couple years ago, and it just blooms like gangbusters, and it is the healthiest plant. So that's another one that I would suggest if you're looking for fall blooming plants, go to your, you know, good nurseries that have good stocks of camellias and check out their sasanqua varieties, which should be blooming this time of year.
How fun. It's nice having things blooming this time of year.
It is, especially you know, choosing the ones that'll kind of hold through Thanksgiving, because if you have, you know, guests coming, it's nice to have a few things blooming in your garden. And then, of course, if you have a little bit of space where you want to have some colorful annuals, and I know, you know, all of us are trying to save water, so we may not plant as many annuals as we used to because they're a little more water, you know, hungry. But I do still love to have a few pots or a few little spaces in the flower beds that have the cool season blooming snapdragons and the Iceland poppies and pansies and all of those traditional cool season plants. And of course, fall's a great time to plant, you know, the biennials like foxglove. So mm-hmm. if you plant your foxglove now, then come spring, you know, you'll get these wonderful tall spires of stunning
beautiful.
Blooms.
They're beautiful, and it's really nice in the back part of your garden. You want some height.
And especially since so many of us live in homes that are pretty close together and we don't have a huge amount of sun, the foxglove will grow in part sun. So that's another fun thing to know. And then another thing, I don't know, have you ever tried Cineraria?
No.
I love Cineraria, and it loves cool weather. And usually this time of year at some of the better nurseries, you can actually find the Cineraria in six packs, and they're not blooming yet. When you usually see them is kind of more into winter around Christmas time, and they come in those great blues and purples. You know, they're like little daisy flowers, but they kind of cover the plant.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I'm talking about? Yeah.
Beautiful.
And so you'll see them a lot, you know, in the wintertime almost as gift plants, you know, because they just cover themselves with these blooms. But if you can find them in six packs in the fall, they're wonderful to plant out in your flower beds. And they won't look like a whole lot for the first month or two. But, man, when they decide to bloom, like I said, they just cover themselves. They don't get that tall. They're only about a foot tall and about a foot wide. But you'll have this mound of blue or purple or, you know, this mauve color. They're really, really a fun. I just tried them for the first time a couple of years ago, and now I try to find them every year because they, you know me in color, they just give you a huge burst of color, which is really fun in the winter, you know, when you don't have a whole lot going on.
And Tina's yard garden is always full of color. Every month
of
the year.
I don't know. Right now, after the heat, it doesn't
work. You still have color, Tina.
There's a little bit going on, a few roses and things like that. But that's one of the reasons I was saying, you know, I really need to work on finding more fall color because this is the typical time of year where I have the least amount of color. So I'm going to make a trip to the nursery and look for some more fall blooming stuff.
I think I'm going to follow you because whatever you do, it always looks good.
So how are we doing on time?
We have about 5-6 minutes left.
5-6 minutes left. Okay. So we talked about all of our blooming stuff. Let's talk quickly about our grasses because our grasses are transitioning. Then quickly about water because we want people to change how they're watering.
Absolutely. That was in my notes.
Yeah.
I'm glad you remembered that.
Yeah. So quickly on grasses, there are two basic types of grasses, the warm season and the cool season grasses. Most of us have cool season fescue. That's been the traditional lawn that's been planted. So if you still have a cool season fescue, what it means in October is that you want to start feeding it. We don't feed our cool season grasses in the summer because they have their more active growing during the cooler months. So if you have cool season grass, go ahead and be feeding it during these cool months. Hopefully we'll get a little rain and you'll have a beautiful little lawn, you know, over the winter if you give it a little food and a couple of times over the cool months.
Make it happy.
Make it happy. Your warm season grasses are going to start looking not so great when the weather gets cold. You know, they turn kind of brownish and they go a little bit dormant. But typically they use a lot less water than those cool season fescues. So they have been recommended to be replacements for our cool season fescues in some quarters if you still want to have lawn, but you want to have a lawn that uses a little less water. But you don't fertilize those lawns in the winter because they are not actively growing. So that's enough about lawns. Water is more important, and Katrina is our water guru, our water miser. So tell people what you do this time of year.
I pay attention. I now pay attention. This is the time of year when I used to get messed up the most because I left the water on as my automatic sprinklers as like it was summertime. And even if it's hot, the days aren't as long.
Yep.
And I noticed, historically speaking, because now we're watching our water bills, right? And I still want to have grass in my yard, and I still want to have flowers, and I still want all my stuff. So if I still want all my stuff, I have to be practical.
Right.
And I have to be mindful. And that's all I try to say is tell people to be mindful. It's time to start watching your clocks. If you have them on automatic sprinklers, watch your clocks. Even if it's hot, you won't need as much water this time of year as you did in the middle of the summertime. Days are shorter.
Absolutely.
And it's not needing it. And we're also going to start cooling down eventually. And we won't need as much water. And it's hopefully going to start raining sometime. And we won't need as much water. So I have been able to have two vegetable gardens, fruit trees, a lawn, and all kinds of flowers and still be within my limits of water, of being mindful water. And it's, if I tell people, just be mindful, watch your leaks, check your sprinklers. You can have a garden and not use tremendous amounts of water.
I agree. I really monitored the last 2 years, since we've had this terrible drought, and over the last 2 years our water rates have, gone up to encourage us to conserve. And I was ready to let my lawn go, but instead I just really, really cut back on the water and monitored it, and I just kind of lived with a few brown spots over the summer. And lo and behold, same for me. I'm able to keep, little chunk of lawn and stay within my water allocation. And as you said, if you're mindful, you can still have a garden. So
you don't have to let it all go.
Right.
And I love my garden. And, days are shorter. And you don't need as much. And you just have to. I didn't pay attention. That's the biggest
None
time
of us
I got
did.
Hung.
Yeah.
The biggest time I got hung up, even after I started paying attention, was the summer or in the fall time.
The transition.
The transition into fall, because I'm like, oh, it's warm.
Yeah.
And it's still hot. My yard needs it. It still needs it, but because it's not raining yet, but it doesn't need as much.
Right. And one thing for folks, if they aren't, able to remember to go out and try to check their sprinkler timers all the time. At least when you change your clocks in the fall, make yourself also go change your sprinklers. And then again in the spring, when we spring ahead, another time to change your clocks and also think about, changing your sprinklers as the days get longer.
And also check your sprinklers.
Absolutely.
Check your sprinklers. It's amazing how wasteful of water a broken sprinkler can be.
Or just one pointed the wrong way, so that it's hitting the driveway and all the water's running down into the street.
Oh, I don't even know that concept anymore.
Yeah, neither do I, but whenever I see it happening, I'm just like, oh no.
Oh my God, water runoff, I don't know what that is.
Believe it or not, I still see it in the neighborhood every now and again.
I still see it too, but if I want to keep some of my water-loving plants, I can't see it in my yard.
Right, not in our yard. So anyway, as Katrina said, it's absolutely the time of year where you want to adjust your water. It's not going to be as hot as it was, and even when it is hot, we're going to have shorter days, shorter number of hours when it's hot. So let's control that controller.
Exactly. And I think with that, we're about there, Tina.
Always goes by so fast.
It goes so fast. Yeah. By so fast. But before we leave, I want to tell everybody that if they have any questions, they can go to our hotline, which is HOTLINE at UCCMG.com. If you have any questions or if you're interested in looking at our website, which there's a lot of great stuff on our website, it's www.uccemg.com. If you're driving right now and you can't write it down, just remember UC Master Gardeners of Orange County, California. You want to make sure you get the California one and not the Florida or the back east ones. That has happened. So just Google us at Master Gardeners, and we have a lot of stuff that's out there for you to learn from, and we give lots of seminars, and we're really out there.
Yeah, check the website for where we're speaking and appearing, because every month we're at different locations that are open to the public. So there's lots of workshops that you can go to.
And they're free.
They're free. And one thing that will be happening in October, if you've got kids, is there's an event in Irvine called Spooktacular, and Master Gardeners will be out there planting seeds with children for them to take home and start their own little gardens.
And where's that going to be?
That will be at the Orange County Grape Park, which is in the city of Irvine, and it will be the 15th and 16th of October, and then also the following weekend, the 22nd and 23rd of October. So it's not just a seed planting thing. It's a whole, it's called Spooktacular. It's to celebrate the Halloween season. And they encourage kids to come dress up. There's a pumpkin patch, a trick-or-treat, lane, and face painting, and all sorts of fun activities. So if you're looking for something to do with the kids in October, do that. But do go to the City of Irvine's website and sign up in advance so that you can participate in all the activities.
All right. Well, Tina, thank you very much, and we hope everybody has a wonderful week, and we're looking forward to talking to you guys next week.